Mi va a traer cosas, Danilo.
Rally Talk, dein Offroad Racing Motorrad Podcast. Hier gibt's alles zum Thema Rally, Enduro und Offroad Racing. Jo, hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge Rally Talk. Es geht wieder in das Rallyversum. Freue ich mich sehr, dass ihr am Start seid. Und heute haben wir auch echt wieder einen Leckerbissen hier am Start. Und zwar haben wir mit einer, ja, schon echten Dakar-Legende gequatscht. Und zwar der Simon Marcic, der seines Zeichens schon mehrfach die Dakar gestartet ist, mehrfach Malemoto das Ganze gefinisht hat und so weiter und so fort. Wahnsinn. Das heißt, wir springen gleich in das Interview und hören uns die wirklich krasse Geschichte an, auch überhaupt, wie er zum Rennenfahren gekommen ist und so weiter und so fort. Will ich hier gar nichts vorwegnehmen. Aber ein ganz, ganz kurzer Hinweis noch. Wir haben bei Dirty Rocks, ihr wisst ja, das ist unser kleiner, feiner Online-Shop, jetzt auch echte Rallye-Klamotten, die Dakar-approved sind, von Myra am Start. Das heißt, wenn ihr Interesse habt an einem maßgefertigten Anzug für Rallye oder auch für Adventure-Riding, dann lasst das uns gerne wissen, tretet mit uns in Kontakt und wenn ihr da Fragen habt, dann schreibt uns einfach und können wir euch einiges dazu erklären. Es gibt auch einen Podcast dafür, die ganzen Infos findet ihr auf der Homepage auf dirtyrocks.de. Das heißt, schaut doch da mal rein und guckt mal, ob da vielleicht was Feines für euch dabei ist. So ist auch der Werbeblock hiermit am Ende. Ja, und ganz kurz, bevor wir zu Simon rüberspringen, vielleicht noch so ein paar Facts. Er selber ist Privatfahrer und hat sich das wirklich von der Pike auf selber erarbeitet, das aus eigener Tasche finanziert, hat Kredite aufgenommen dafür, um dahin zu kommen, wo er heute ist. Also, dass er jetzt schon das Glück hat, mit Sponsoren zusammenzuarbeiten, die ihm das Ganze ermöglichen auf dem Niveau. Und auch die ganze restliche Geschichte ist echt eine richtig coole Story. Er ist auch dieses Jahr bei der Dakar wieder gefahren, in der Kistenfahrerklasse, in der Malemoto-Klasse. Und das Geile ist, nächstes Jahr, also nächste Dakar, wird auf jeden Fall sein 10. Start. Das heißt, er bekommt dann den Badge Dakar Legend. Das bekommt man ab 10 Starts. Und das ist schon echt eine Nummer. Jetzt habe ich ja wirklich hier genug gequatscht, würde ich mal sagen. Und wir springen einfach direkt ins Interview. Und ich wünsche euch viel Spaß damit. So, Simon, once again, thank you for being here. We already started talking a little bit. And I'm just, you mentioned it already, how everything started. So how did it start that you get your hands on bikes, and how does it end up that you've been doing the Dakar? I think it was the fourth time this year. Am I right?
Actually ninth. It was already my ninth Dakar.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. It's easy to mix. But I finished four times in Saudi. Totally, I finished six times, two times in South America, and now all the four rally editions, Dakar editions in Saudi Arabia. So yeah,
I messed it up. So next time Dakar, yeah. I think you are a legend. 10 starts, and then you got the legend badge on it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm becoming a legend with the following edition. So I'm really hyped. When I started with the Dakar, I never believed that could be possible one day. Honestly, because it was. When I started, first of all, I started relatively, let's say, maybe not late, but at the age of 31 was my first Dakar. So, I thought maybe I can go one, two times, maybe three times, just to experience that, to finish it. Of course, I always wanted to race professionally, but, when you're growing up, when you see the reality, how the world works, I also started racing with motorbikes. Like 2008 was my first race, and it was the same year that the big depression came into the Europe. Mm. So it was also so hard. yeah, at that time, you know, to start basically from scratch, because before that I was racing mountain bike downhill, which
okay.
was which is similar, but it's much less expensive, I would say. Because you know, it's especially at that time, and I had really good conditions here because I'm from Maribor, Slovenia. I don't know if you follow downhill. It's we have World Cup here.
It's
so
quite a nice
was,
place where you live.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, so you know, it was really hard in the beginning, but I tried first time. I didn't finish. Then I went second time. I finished barely, but then somehow it opens me the doors, you know, and yeah, somehow I managed to make a good story with especially with the original class. People back home likes it because it was a different story, not just racing, you know, to go there, shred it every day, but also especially in South America, it was like a lot of how to survive for 2 weeks all around.
So you bring so many interesting points up, which I'd love to talk about. But first things first, how did the switch came that you changed from downhill riding to going into motorsports and racing dirt bikes?
Yeah, actually, it was just a matter of time because my passion was always motorbikes. Also, I always wanted, it was my dream to race the motorbikes. But as I mentioned, I wasn't from a rich family. My parents were very, very much average, so we couldn't afford to buy me motorbikes or anything when I was a kid. So I was first actually racing with snowboarder cross. Then somehow I transferred to pull some sponsors, some shops, you know, some freestyle shops into downhill. Also because my high school was like supporting sport a lot, and high school had like mountain bikes, better bikes, so I could start with their bikes, then get my own. But I was always, you know, just seeking, waiting for some kind of opportunity to switch to motorsport. And the opportunity actually came like 2008, at the beginning in February. I break my leg, literally seriously in Bosnia in a free ride snowboarding. I was actually participating one snowboard cross there, and the following days we were like doing some backcountry in Bosnian mountains, and yeah, I broke my leg like really badly, and also they were always like they were fighting for a couple of days, almost they cut it off, but luckily I keep the leg.
Well, it sounds like a nightmare which turned luckily out in a good way, so.
Yeah, exactly, because I was like pretty good in I had a good insurance, so I got like enough money to buy a first race motorbike. I had motorbikes before, but like old ones, you know, like 5 to 10 years old, so they were not like proper to race. So yeah, that year I get enough money from insurance to buy a new enduro bike and started racing right away. I mean,
I
was healed.
That's amazing story, but I'm sure that it's good that no one knows from the insurance that you got a broken leg from snowboarding, and the first thing is, oh well, I can buy a race bike after that from the
yeah, exactly.
Maybe the insurance account was thinking, oh my god, no.
yeah, probably it was exactly like this, yes.
Oh wow, and so now then you've already been dreaming of doing Dakar and rally stuff, or have you been in motocross or enduro racing before, and how did you, was your way moving from enduro racing or motocross to rally stuff?
Yeah, actually, the Dakar was like my real dream, like way before all of that, way before I started racing downhill or also snowboarding. You know, I was always up to action sports, but Dakar was when I was like, I don't know, 9, 10, something like this. I saw one guy, one Slovenian guy that was racing, and there was like a big, big article on the TV. And I saw all these footages from the choppers, you know, of the desert riding. And it was, I said, at that time, I said, look, I want to do it one day. I never knew if it's going to be possible or when it's going to be possible. But I just said to myself, I need to go for it. You know, so I was during my childhood and then growing up and everything, you know, I forget about this wish, you know, there were certain other things, but it was always somewhere in behind.
Yeah.
You know, it was somewhere there, even though I was like focused totally to mountain biking. Now, yeah, maybe I can succeed in mountain biking, you know, then you forget about, but it was always like coming back, you know, this, yeah. It was, I couldn't like,
It's the same. It's the same with me. Totally. I've saw my first glimpse on Dakar. I think in the same age like you did, 9 or 10. I don't know for sure. And yeah, it was always there. It was always there that I wanted to do rally and so and yeah. When I was younger, some interest changes and you. If you're young and you maybe kind of stupid, you get lost of different ideas and so on. But this thing was always in my mind, and I'm as I told you at the moment, I'm working to just get my foot in and start with it. I mean, it's
of course
maybe it's late for the age. I won't become a professional racer anymore, but let's see what happens.
Doesn't even matter, you know, to be a professional or not. But maybe you can do another story, you know, not just directly with racing results. It's with social media and everything. There's so many opportunities, you know, to just do some content or whatever, you know, to somehow live out of it. That I don't know. 10 years ago, I could never even imagine, you know. But
yeah, for
now.
Sure. But I think even with the Dakar, it's just a Dakar thing. When it catches you one time, I think it will never really let the grip of you.
Yeah, exactly. That's like a little bit like you know, addiction. But it is, seriously, if I'm honest, I don't imagine myself, you know, to even celebrate the new year anywhere else than somewhere in the, you know, waiting for the start of the Dakar, which is
being in the bivouac around all the guys and
exactly.
So so you had always this on your mind, the big goal Dakar, and then you how did you manage to get at the start line? I've heard so many different stories about it, but I always heard if you are so we just don't talk about the professional riders which are doing this as their job. We are talking about private riders which have to gather the money, have to put a lot of work in finding sponsors, making it all happen. There are so many things to sort out, and then you have to prep yourself, prep the bike. How was your first time getting to Dakar? How did you make this big dream happen?
Yeah, actually it was 2014 was my first Dakar. I wanted also already like go 2013, because 13 is my lucky number. So I said, look, it's a proper, if I go, you know, it's but 2012, you know, I got robbed. Somebody stole my bikes, two of my bikes, my equipment and everything. And luckily I get it back. Yeah, it was luckily I get it back. Yeah, but after four or 5 months, so I already like dropped the project, because I thought, look, I cannot go without, I don't have anything, you know. So I might even never go, because they stole everything from me, you know. Now and I need to first build everything back, then, you know. So But then, you know, then I get all the bikes back and everything. And soon after the Dakar 2013, I said, look, now I need to pull a trigger. You know, somehow I felt maybe it would be easier to go a year later, you know, because I was expecting, honestly, more support from the sponsors. But I was literally, at the beginning, there was no support at all. Nobody knew about me. You know, they were all asking me, hey, isn't there another guy from Slovenia is racing? So I had to always explain, yeah, he's also racing, but I'm also going. So it was really tough. You know, mostly I had to pay my own money that I saved for almost a decade. Plus, I had to borrow the money. I had to take a loan on a bank.
Wow. Yeah.
And yeah, it's really hard. First time is hard because you need to buy a bike. I mean, you can rent one, but I was like, okay, I want to go. I want to buy a bike. I want to have this bike. You know, they're beautiful. I like them. They're gonna last.
Yeah, awesome machines. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
And I think if you're renting a bike, yeah, it's in the first hand it's cheaper, but I don't know if you have to break anything and so you have to pay afterwards. And I know I think I would prefer to go with my own bike as well, to be honest.
Yeah. It's smart. It's smart. You know, try to, if you have an option, go for it. So
yeah.
even if you buy a used one, is all good because the bikes are so reliable now that.
Yeah, you know, that's
two,
awesome.
Two, or, three, four, that kind of thing. Yeah.
If
awesome.
You're thinking that you're going with a 450 bike with a lot of horsepower and you're doing this distance with one engine, and that's just quite unbelievable.
Yeah.
A decade ago, that wouldn't be possible in this way.
Yeah, crazy. And also, you know, for example, I made like. Not this one. This year I had a new engine, but the previous two Dakars, I made two Dakars with one engine.
Oh,
not
wow.
opened at all. And it's not just me. Yeah, and it's not just me. You know, it's also like Mani Ganesh, who won this original class a couple years ago. He was also second, and also another people from France. We were all talking. They said, I didn't open it at all. We only opened the head... Not the head of the engine, but the deck of the head.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Just checking the valves.
Exactly. Check the valves and everything. It was all like new, and we just closed it back. So I made like two Dakars with one engine.
This is crazy reliable.
But also, if you consider, for example, the piston for the rally bike, the original piston. I assume that you know something about the bikes. You have like two bikes, three even, you know, so you know how much it costed, like a piston for a dirt bike for your Beta, for example. It's about for €200 to €300, you really get a good piston, a racing one.
For sure.
For the rally bike, the price is €1,200 just for the piston. Without... Yeah, without wings, without crazy.
Yeah.
So
they're putting some I don't know fancy special stuff in it in Austria.
Yeah, exactly.
But it pays out. It pays out for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool. So your first Dakar, have you been a Malemoto rider from the scratch, or have you done your first with a team or?
No, at that time when I started, it was a rule. You couldn't go for your first, as a rookie, you couldn't go, you're not allowed to go alone without the team. You had to go first with the team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but now I think it's not, they left this rule because I saw guys this year that were for the first time and they were already in the original, so I think it's not, or maybe it is, or maybe they qualified over some another races somehow or whatever. But no, first year I was with a team, actually with the German team. It was called Team Kaiser.
Okay.
Team Kaiser was, so it was like two German guys in this team, me and another Slovenian guy and a guy from Hungary. Actually, two guys from Hungary. So it was like a Slovenian, German, Hungary team. But the owner was, it was a German team.
Yeah. Ah, very
it was
interesting.
Cool.
Very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So then you
get back and you do it in the Malemoto way. Why riding Malemoto?
Yeah, for first year I was with the team and it was like I crashed out of the race already on a stage three.
So it was
really, really hard. First of all, I wanted to ride, see the deserts and everything, you know. We just started with the second day coming to the desert. First day was more like formality. So I was disappointed. Second of all, nobody knew about me. I get none of the publicity. So also the following year, it was impossible for me to get any funds for the Dakar.
Yeah.
I tried like desperately, you know, I was looking for the sponsors all around, all the way, but I couldn't get it.
Plus,
I also realized, it was really, really hard. 2014
was really hard. If you're putting a debt on the bank, even just to go to the start, then at least it's your goal to just ride a few stages or ride all stages and just enjoy the whole race and not crash out. I can understand. I feel that it's really disappointing.
Yeah, it was really not just after the Dakar, also the whole year, you know. It was like really, because I, at least when I came home, people were, friends were happy. Yeah, so you on television, okay, you crashed out, but still the first three stages were awesome. So I was like positive, you know. I thought, okay, at least we get something, and at least people from the local environment get to know me, you know. So it might be a bit easier for the sponsors.
But
it wasn't, you know. It totally wasn't. So, but plus I also realized that it was that I don't have enough knowledge about the navigation, that I get lost already on the second day, then again before the crash on the third day. So I was like, fuck, maybe I should go, you know, somewhere, maybe Abu Dhabi Desert Challenge. So I decided, okay, look, Abu Dhabi Desert Challenge is a smaller race. It's
cheaper. It's a lot of cheaper.
You know, and it was a story that, because here in Maribor we have a company who is building actually buses for the airports, you know, the wide ones.
So I
made a story with the PR girl and went to the boss and said, look, I'm going to raise Abu Dhabi as a challenge. You are making the buses for the airports. The organizer of my race is the Sheikh, that is also the owner of the airports there.
So arrange
a meeting with him on the same time that is this race, Abu Dhabi Desert Challenge, and you tell him that you have rider on the start, and that you came also to see the race. And they will respect it so much that you will definitely make a business.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, that's true. How much you need and when do you need? It was really luck also. But I've also learned a lot from this situation now, because now I started realizing that the sponsorship and marketing is not just that somebody will give you money and you will put a sticker on a bike or on a van or on, this is going to be it. You need to build a story about it. So, you know, this was actually the base jump for me. You know, something that opened my doors, because then I went to Abu Dhabi. I finished 14. It was a world championship. I could make a good story back home. So it was like really successful. And then, because of this result, I could get the money for the Dakar 2016.
Yeah.
15 I left out, you know, and then 16 I get it just enough to get there. And then, it was easier and better every year. So.
Oh, wow. What a story. And then from now on, you've been racing Malemoto. And Malemoto thing, is it – so – on one hand, Malemoto is I think the cheapest way you can do Dakar. because you don't have to pay for a team and mechanic and so on. Yeah, it's tough, but it's the cheapest way also. But I've heard so many stories about a special camaraderie and all that stuff, talking to Kirsten Landmann this year. Why are you a Malemoto rider? And I think you're a Malemoto rider by heart because you've done it several times. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, that's true. Like you said, my first 2016 first participation in the Malemoto was mostly because of finance. You know, because I had a deficit, I knew I cannot get enough to go with the team. Again, luckily I don't need to. So I said, look, I have enough to go now. Maybe I can finish. That was like my goal. Now it's then also next year and then next year it was maybe because of the money and the budget. But then it becomes like really, like you said, it's more adventurous. It's much more this friendship between us. It's totally different, I would say. Yeah. You know, you also need to be smart. If you will crash a lot, risk too much, you will smash the bike, then you will fixing the bike like the whole night. You will not sleep. You will not regenerate, recover, and it will be tough next day. So you lose more than you get the day before.
That's true, yeah. For myself, I love the Malemoto story and the feeling, and every time talking to a Malemoto rider and there's so much passion about it. I mean, that the pro riders, the professionals, they're doing an awesome job and bringing the sport on the absolute end level. No question about it. But in my heart, I was going always with the Malemoto guys. I really love this, and I think it's so amazing what they're doing. And they are creating the stories. I mean, when I listen to your story now, I mean, just starting the way to Dakar with a broken leg, that's something you only hear in the Malemoto world, I guess. So it's so special, and I really love this story because these are the stories only Dakar can tell, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. Definitely.
So, one question. So and that's really interesting. Yeah. You've been racing Dakar in South America, and you've been doing Dakar now in Saudi. Did the race change? And what are your general thoughts about? Do you prefer Dakar more in Saudi, or do you prefer it more in South America? What do you think about all this?
Yeah, my opinion is I personally loved Dakar in South America much more. There are like several reasons. Maybe I can't say much more, but I like it more.
Okay.
There are like really several reasons. First of all, is it was a summer there. You know, now we have a winter.
Yeah, it was so freezing cold this year. I got already a freezing nose when I watched the videos.
Yeah, crazy. It was like really, really freezing, you know. So in South America it was totally different. You know, it was like 35, even 40 degrees during the day sometimes. When we were in the park in Argentina, for example, that was too hot. They just send us to the Andes or to some plateaus, Altiplano, 2-3 meters, 2,000 or 3 or even 4,000 meters high. And we were in a cool weather, you know, and then just for the end of the stage, went back from the plateau to the bivouac where it was again 30, 35. So it was like more summer. Also we were in South America, we were like really racing the continent, it was the whole South America.
Also border crossings during the rally. It was two or three countries you've been riding.
Yes, exactly. It was never until the last year that it was there was 100% Peru. Yeah. This was the first time in the history, 2019, that it was only one country. Because the Dakar was always going through the continent, you know. So Now we are in one country, but okay, doesn't matter. The third thing was like spectators.
Yeah.
You know, South America is they're crazy passionate about motorsport. Crazy. It's only football and motorsport there. Nothing else.
Yeah.
And you know, people were so crazy about us. You know, it's a special feeling when people are so passionate. Now in Saudi, there's no one.
Mm.
There's no one even watching. You know, you see some spectators sometimes, but it's maybe 10% how it was in South America.
To be honest, so, that's a big point I missed, seeing the spectators, because that was for me, just for me, it was always a part of the Dakar. I know it was discussed a lot because due to security issues and there have been some awful accidents in the past, so that the car or a bike or whatever crashed into spectators or people. That's for sure. Yeah. Safety is important. But I miss to see the crowds cheering the riders and when the riders stop, they're getting crowded and everyone wants to get autogram or whatever, shake hands, get a sticker. Yeah. I don't know. And that was always, you know, part of seeing how the Dakar and the riders are connecting to the people in the country. That was always for me a thing which I love to see.
Yeah, exactly. I can only confirm what you said. This is also what I'm missing. And on the other hand, when you said about the safety, you know, it's much less spectators now, but in the on the other hand, this year also one spectator got killed because he was not even a spectator, maybe it was a photographer of the media guy or a guy who was there, you know, because of course everybody that is coming to see want to be as close as possible. Sometimes it's hard to see in the desert, in the dunes, you know, all the people that are walking and he just got drive over a truck and
that's sad to hear, but it's a dangerous place being around a rally, and you have to really be smart where you place yourself and for sure. I've heard stories that it was kind of dangerous too, because the Saudis tried to race the drivers and been driving around crazy, mostly on the liaison, so that the liaisons have been even more dangerous, like the specials.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes it was crazy, especially when it was raining this year, you know, and there was like in Saudi, in all Arabic countries, they don't have this system to I don't know how to say it in English, the channels, you know, the channels for the water and everything. They don't have it. So basically when it's raining hard, they're like basically lakes, you know, on the roads and everything. You know, so it was, with the motorbikes, it was really hard. You couldn't see the edge of the road, you know. So if somebody with the car was like beeping a lot, and going into your side, you're trying to move away, but then it was edge and it took your wheel. Some people got crashed on the road badly. Some were injured, some not. So it was dangerous. Yeah, this year definitely.
Wow, that's crazy.
It was really fun.
Man. So you're planning to do Dakar again at the next time in Malemoto to get your legend patch. I've heard that one out at the beginning.
Yes, exactly. I think I'm gonna do at least two more times in a Malemoto.
Yeah.
Because now I'll be legend. Then the next year I'll be actually the first one who would start 10 times in a row in a Malemoto class. So this is also a label that I would like to reach. So for sure. Then we'll see if I'll go to the buggy possibly, or stay, maybe go with the team.
Yeah,
we'll see. now I'm trying to be focused
like an awesome plan. And due to your success, I think you made it. You made a good way with having some really solid sponsors. to support you, and I would love to follow you and see you racing the Malemoto class for sure.
Thank
Yeah.
you.
So, but one last question, I think. If you could change at Dakar freely, so what would be your wishes? How should the race develop in your thoughts, or are there any things where should be made changes in your thoughts?
Yeah. Honestly, first of all, okay. If I could do whatever I wanted, then I would say let's go back to South America and race there again. You know, we have a great desert. Atacama Desert is a beautiful one. We have Andes. We have a high altitude deserts in Bolivia. We have Patagonia. There's so many places. You know that we haven't been so far. So I would go there, but. Let's, if we say, okay, let's stay realistic, because also the problem is also that South American countries are not poor, but not that much that rich like Saudi Arabia and these countries that has oil are. So so yeah, this is also a big factor, I would say. And so if we focus to the, let's say that we stay here in Arabia, I would connect more, involve more countries.
Yeah,
you know, go more, maybe go more to the north, to Jordan, maybe even to the Egypt, and go more to the south, Oman, Emirates. This would be, you know, something different, because honestly, now we are riding for 4 years. Now we are for 4 years. There are four editions in Saudi Arabia, and okay, it's always something new. But on the other hand, you already know, okay, we are going this area, it will be stony, this will be sandy, it will be like this. So it is new, but on the other hand, you know,
it's just still Saudi.
Still, exactly, you know, because for example, in South America, you know, we were, where are we going? No, tomorrow Bolivia, what's it gonna be? Anybody knows? So you were, you know, you went, like in the morning, you sit on a bike, go on a Liaison, it was like, a new adventure, where are we going?
Now
I'm already, now this is now this Liaison, then we have this desert like last year, this part, we were coming, sleeping there, I've already seen this for three times. Yeah.
To be honest, I'd love to in South America. I'd love also that the rally or the way or the kind of the specials have been changed. So you started and the stages have been more like a really long World Rally Championship series, like the VRC or something like that. The WRC. And then it changed, and then you've been in the big dunes and got in these wide open landscapes, and then you've been on the next day or 2 days again, you've been on the narrow twisty roads going up in the mountains, and so you've got in one rally so many different types of terrains, which includes
exactly.
a different style of riding and so on, and I for me that was quite nice to see.
Yeah, definitely, and also okay about the terrain and everything. This is at least something positive I can say. The terrain is also in Saudi is quite diverse. The terrain itself, the track. So the track, if I'm honest, might even be better in Saudi.
Yeah.
But all besides, for example, in South America, you were also like crossing. I remember 2018, the last big like a proper. Really, it was a fourth anniversary. It was Peru, Bolivia, Argentina. We were basically changing the three climate zones.
Oh, wow.
You know, for example, it was crazy. We started in Peru, it was like oceanic climate, you know, like 20 to 25 over the day, similar over the night, desert, dry, all good. Then we went high altitude to Bolivia. It was raining, like rain season, raining every morning, clear sky, no clouds. About 1 o'clock, it starts raining until the midnight. Stop raining again, clear sky, neck. So it was crazy. And then we dropped down to Argentina, where it was like continental climb, you know, to 40 degrees over the day, hot. So yeah, crazy.
Yeah.
Like,
Perfect.
Like really, really diverse.
So, Simon, thank you for sharing your story. That was a huge inspiration. To hear your way, how you managed to get ready, and I think you're showing that if you put enough passion in a dream or in an idea, and if you chase it, then you will work your way around to reach the goal. So maybe you have a last tip if someone is listening here right now and is thinking, oh, I want to just start rally riding or go to the Dakar. What would be your words to advice for the person to start?
Yeah, look, if you have a dream, just don't give up and go for it. You know, even if everybody is telling you, no, it's too expensive, it's too dangerous, it's too, I don't know what, it's just too something. You know, if it's true wish, if you're doing that for yourself, that is in your heart, that you're not doing this for I don't know, some other reasons, I don't know what could that be, because certainly you're not going to earn like a millions with it, but if it's a true wish, go for it, don't look back, and you can do it for
Perfect.
Sure.
Thank you very much. All right.
Thank you too.
So thank you, Simon. We hope to see you again here or hear you again in our podcast. At least we'd love to talk to you at the next Dakar around with you. And so I think we stay in touch, and we wish you all the best for your riding, for your rally projects. And we talk soon.
Yeah, thank you very much. I enjoyed it a lot, and a nice conversation. So yeah, I would love to be your guest again, and thanks for invitation. I'm super hyped. I'm flattered.
Yeah, you're always welcome. All right.
Thank you. Thank you.